Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Welcome to another GeoMob Podcast. This afternoon, I could tell you that Tom Armitage is a geospatial professional with 20 years' experience of working in GIS. I could tell you that he's currently a technical writer for MapTiler. I could tell you that he's also an honorary fellow in the School of Geosciences at the University of Edinburgh. But instead of that, I'm going to say Tom is one of, to use a Brit phrase, the good eggs in British geo. He's somebody who's been passionate about mapping and geo and open source. He's been involved in OSGeo UK. He's been a massive advocate for QGIS. And perhaps most importantly for me personally, he's been a great teacher of how to do cartography with QGIS. And anybody who's been in a workshop or a class with Tom will know how passionate he is, but also how skillful he is in using these tools. So I think he's a cartographic good egg, and welcome to the podcast, Tom. It's lovely to have you here. I think it's about 3 years ago since you were last on the podcast, and so welcome back. You're in a new role now. But before we start talking about MapTiler, just give us a little bit of background on Tom Armitage, how you got into geo, how you migrated from academia to MapTiler, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty.
Well, thanks. Thank you so much for the... I'm feeling rather embarrassed. No, that was a wonderful introduction. Thank you ever so much. Yes. Well, yes, it's been 3 years since the last podcast, and it's been a very busy 3 years for me. But yeah, I'll wind it back a little bit about how I started. It was quite a conventional introduction, doing a geography and geology degree, taking a master's in GIS after that. And then doing a few interesting roles around about, some at the university, writing and working with a bit of programming on the Gazetteer for Scotland, and then moving into the Land Registry, Scotland's Land Registry, and doing a bit of general geo work there. But it was quite an interesting, it was at that point, I think, there was a split. They advertised one role for a general GIS person at that institution, and when I turned up on day one, there were two of us, and a good friend of mine got the same job, but it quickly divided into two roles, and it was one that was definitely more technical and one that was more about talking, and I naturally gravitated to the talking role, whereas my friend ended up with the technical role. So it started quite early on in the career, this whole idea of talking, evangelizing, and just generally getting people excited about geo and getting them to finding the right person for them to talk to. Because technically, maybe I've always been the strongest, but I've always known who is the person to ask, who's the person to talk to, or where is in the documentation to look for those answers. And so that naturally led me on into this role of user support and teaching based at the University of Edinburgh on the Digimap service, and also more latterly actually teaching on the MSc that I did in 2002. So that's always been my thing, getting people to be excited about maps and finding the right information, finding the right people. So it was a natural fit for me then to move on from that into the marketing team at MapTiler, I think, because whether you're running a training course, writing a blog post, teaching a class, or writing copy for an email campaign, you're always, I get excited about knowing at the end of it, more people will be enthusiastic about maps. And that's what puts a smile on my face. That's what it gives me that kick.
Yeah. And, you know, it comes over when you're talking about your career, your passion for doing this and communicating about maps comes over. So that's great. And I mean, I know from chatting to you before we started recording how passionate you are about what you're doing at MapTile, what a great company it is. And so let's start, before we get into the detail, tell us a bit about MapTile, because some of our listeners won't know who MapTile is and what they do.
Absolutely. Well, there will be many that don't. There may be some that might recall back as far as 2008, which is when I first encountered MapTile. It's actually a product then, created by Peter Priedl, our CEO, to turn scans of paper maps into actual georeference tiled maps that you could view on the web. So being in the academic world and seeing a lot of this was used in the libraries and university libraries, so they were all scanning their mapping collections and moving them online, and that was the software that was used. So now we're a Swiss company with a team of about 50 colleagues spread across Europe and beyond, and we provide users with a sort of a suite of software and services. So we have MapTile Cloud, our mapping API, which is what people use to sort of embed maps in their websites and their apps and things like that. And that's how most of our users interact with us, I would say. And then there's also MapTile Server and Data, which essentially lets you have that power, but running it on premise. So you're doing the same sorts of things, but running from your own computers. And then there's our MapTile Engine, which is the original software from 2008 with 18 years of additional development that's gone into it, but still now doing that business end of turning those, not just scanned, but all the modern collections of spatial data, be it from satellites, drones, scans of paper maps, whatever, turning that spatial data into tiled maps that can be accessed by over the web or through apps.
So is it all raster tiles, or are you now doing these snazzy new vector tiles, which I don't understand, but you're going to explain to me in a minute?
Well, that's absolutely right. It's not all raster tiles. It is now more about vectorizing or having vector tiles, vector data, which is so much faster to transmit across the web and so much more flexible. You can do more things with that in terms of when you're zooming and things through the layers. You don't have to sort of bring in another map at the next layer and pick out what resolution is best to display it. You can do a lot more actually in the browser. But yes, it's not just maps at MapTile. We provide that sort of complete map platform for the processing and publishing of spatial data, both online and on-premise. So like I was saying, we have that MapTile engine to turn your data into map tiles, integrate it into the maps, and then serve that out to the websites. And that could be, like I said, via the cloud or via your on-premise MapTile service.
So if I've got a point layer, for example, I can upload that point layer to MapTile and then serve those points in an app on top of an OpenStreetMap base map.
Exactly right. Again, we've got a whole load of different options with base maps that essentially around the OpenStreetMap, but with lots of augmentations and things like that we do. We have our award-winning or really great mapping styles that are preloaded, and something maybe we can talk about later is the ability to customize and put your own styling on those maps. So it's a really strong platform for doing exactly that, publishing. But equally, if you need that to be in a secure environment on premise, then there's that option too.
So give me a couple of examples of people who we might know of that are using, and the ones that obviously you can talk about.
Thank you. Yes. So when you look at our custom base, it's a huge range. So there are individual developers working on personal projects. So you may have noticed things like Robin Hawkes was using it for some of his little personal projects. Alistair Ray as well. There's people that you might know. But mainly we're aiming at web developers and who are producing these websites, but through media companies who can use these maps style them how they want and publish them in videos with the geo layers as well. So we're seeing a lot of the German newspapers. But you might also notice the weather alerts coming from the Met Office have a map tiler base map. And we're doing all sorts of things with large companies like Ericsson, Siemens, who are integrating these maps and geocoding into their back-end systems. So not things that you would ever see in public, but it's all going on there in the background, managing supply chains, these sorts of things. But we're also really proud of how much the third sector uses MapTiler as well. So German Red Cross, Greenpeace, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, just popping into my head as recent examples that we're doing. And the big one at the moment that people may well have seen is the Deep State Live project, which we're sponsoring with Free Maps, which is mapping the ongoing conflict in Ukraine.
Right. So if I described you as a European map box, would that be a compliment or an insult?
Well, in many ways, it is a compliment, as there are many similarities, but there are quite a few differences between us. So, I mean, it's true to say that we are a smaller company than, say, Google Maps or Mapbox. A big difference is that we're a bootstrap company. So that lets us be a lot more agile and flexible. So big difference is that we're very keen on privacy. And so we don't gather any end user telemetry. We don't resell any of the movement data, which you'll find things that Google Mapbox do these sorts of things. Even anonymize, we don't even do that. And that flexibility also lets us do things like mixing our stack with third-party companies, so we're not nailing you down into our ecosystem. We have plugins for Leaflet and for QGIS, which always makes me smile that I can fire up a QGIS map and drag in some map tiler layers. And that being bootstrapped, again, is fantastic because we invest back into the products and the people in the company. And that, you know, we're very, very proud of the fact that our team has a lot of say in what we do. It's a sort of a very open and honest, great environment to work for. And that investment also can go back into the open source community, which, as you know, is something that we're both very, very passionate about. And we're one of those good companies that gives back, with lots of these open source projects, not just the plugins for Leaflet and QGIS, but we're quite instrumental in bringing Map Libre to life. And we have the Open Map Tiles project as well, which we providing free maps that people can use. There's lots of that, and you know, it also helps us that we can be a bit more affordable than the other ones, because we don't have to pay off our investors. But we'd like to think that we've got that human touch. So if you get in touch with us, you're not going to be speaking to an AI bot or things like that.
And I think, you know, I know a few people who work at MapTiler, and the sort of Venn diagram between MapTiler, open source, and open data, there's a massive intersection in the center where a number of my friends exist in all three of those spaces. So, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
I mean, not only is Tom a good egg, but I would describe MapTiler as a good egg, a good open source citizen.
That's very true. But we are still a relatively large company within the sector. So it is true to say that, yes, we have all those benefits of being smaller than those companies, but being bigger than many of the other options that are out there means that we still have that global cloud infrastructure that the bigger companies can draw on. So it's really reliable, really performant. So we can offer that hassle-free solution for maps. People don't need to worry about, these maps are loading slowly when they're opened in the United States. We've got that global infrastructure. And they don't need to worry about, I constantly need to keep updating my maps, load balancing. That's all taken care of. And we've got that support team as well. I mean, they've I have to mention them because they've just celebrated three consecutive months of with 100% satisfaction rating. So we're really, really pleased about that. But it means we can take on things like on-premise deployments and do that sort of thing. And we have our R&D as well, which, you know, we is where that investment goes back into the company. So we can do that in-house production of these really big global high-res satellite layers, the terrain, things that you wouldn't see in any other mapping company, because they're our own in-house products.
So let's talk about some of, because I want to talk about new stuff, because it's taken me about 3 or 4 months from first mooting the idea of this podcast with Yakim for you to actually be able to come on the podcast, having the time and everything. And a part of the reason was that there's been a flurry of new releases coming out about MapTiler. So let's just go through some of that stuff. So you'd mentioned customization earlier on, Tom. What is it that you're doing with customization that you think is special?
Well, this is, yeah, I mean, cartography is the thing that really gets me excited about maps. I think sometimes I do get that whole imposter syndrome and with my
coffee.
Yeah, but I've had a map in the calendar, the GeoHipster calendar and things like that. But I quite often, you know, worry that my work is completely derivative. But I have had some lovely messages from the team at Ordnance Survey saying, "Well, we're all in the same boat, Tom. We're all in the same." But yet, playing with cartography and doing that sort of stuff is just really does get me quite excited. So when I first came to MapTiler, we've got these wonderful, beautiful cartographic map styles. But if you wanted to do some more detailed stuff, some more detailed changes, the interface that you had to play with was kind of something that would be more familiar to someone who's used to Mapnik. So a lot of, typing and not much creativity. You had to know a lot of stuff to be able to really maximize the potential. Exactly. Style sheets, you know, it was much more of a sort of a text-based approach, and then have a look, still don't like it, back to the drawing board and find out a few more options. So more or less the same amount of time that I've been at MapTiler, we have been working with user experience people, experts, looking at how we could really improve and enhance this aspect of the service. So what we've been doing now is just making it so much easier for people to produce a great looking piece of cartography. So it's gone from that sort of Mapnik style sheet approach through to a sort of, I'd say now, a fully fledged cartography tool. And kind of, you know, timing this as well with hopefully we'll see some people use this in the 30-day map challenge. That would be really, really exciting. But yet, usability has been the key throughout the process. So, and it's slightly different. So it's not going to be the same experience as you would have using a GIS software, because our service is primarily aimed at web developers or software developers and perhaps designers. So we had to get to know their language first before we could actually produce something that would be really usable and easy for them to use. So we had to be really mindful of you know, not building something for us, but building something for the key customers that use our services. So key to that has been to move away as much as possible from like that JSON code and guessing which text options are available for you and when you have to switch to a hex code for a color, and making much more of these options available in the visual user interface. So we've got things now where you can organize your layers that are in the map by what would make sense to a GIS person or how your data's structured, or you can just flip that straight through to what we call verticality. And it just orders everything in the way that it's drawn on the map. So if you want lakes to appear above rivers for some reason or vice versa, you can just drag and drop these things into the right order, start playing with them. Everything's color selection, line thickness, styles, all of these things are now options that you can just apply easily to each layer. And also, if you have JSON code already, the option is always still there to just drop that into that layer and style it in the way that you wanted it. Why we've been making you wait is a lot of these extra functionality things that we've worked on the usability, and then that's great. Well, now it makes users, well, now I can do this. I want to be able to do that. So things like custom markers, you can upload the SVGs. Quite recently, we've added in the ability. So if you've got like photos from say your trip to Venice or to Rome, or you're wanting to advertise your services and things, you can add in little pictures, shop fronts as markers on the maps, these sorts of things. Upload patterns, so you can create your own. We've done a really nice version of the watercolor maps, our own aquarelle version. So adding those things like the texture patterns that can go behind the colors and everything like that. So, yeah, it's really becoming a fully fledged tool now.
So, if I've understood that correctly, this is turning it almost into a sort of highly customizable web GIS.
In terms of the way that you are...
In terms of the cartography.
Exactly. In terms of the way you present your maps. It's going back to those sort of idea of publishing data and then using that on in your web maps and your apps. So, you know, we've got the things like you can upload your data now, you can drag it and drop it in there, and then you can then customize it, make it look exactly how you want it to look, and then put that into your apps and maps. And so, yes, obviously there's a long way to go for the GIS analysis and things like this, but that whole idea of taking data and presenting it on the web, we're looking at a full system. And just the other day we had just added in this brilliant little tool that you've got regular search function, sort of functionality where you can search for a location. You search for Rome, it'll pop up a little marker on all the Romes, or it'll put a little dotted line around the city of Rome, the boundary for it. Now we've just embedded the functionality there where you can then just say, well, I want that little dotted line that represents Rome in my map. So you can export that straight into the customization, bring in more little bits of data. If you've got your own point file, like you were saying, upload that, style how you want the markers, and it's just there ready to use however you're publishing your maps.
Cool. I think I'm going to have a play with this, even though I'm not a web developer, see whether I can get results out of it.
Fantastic. We're looking forward. Please share.
Okay. So you mentioned celebrity cartographers at some stage.
Yes. Well, we'll see what happens. Keep your eyes peeled on the 30-day map challenge. Hopefully we'll get some people that you may have heard of using these maps. Unfortunately, no promises, but we'll hopefully, fingers crossed, and hope to see something there. Yes. Conversations still need to be finalized. Yeah.
So the 30-day map challenge runs through November, doesn't it?
Yes.
And you've always been very active around this time of the year. Just describe what happens in the 30-day map challenge. How did it start and what is it?
So, yeah, I think it was Topi Chukunov, hopefully I've done his surname justice, who originally founded this. It's just every day a map of a different theme. And the themes have just been released. I haven't had a time to really thoroughly go through them, but there's a different topic per day, and everyone just shares the maps. And the idea is that this shouldn't be too onerous a task. You create a map for the daily topic, and share them on social media. So yes, this has been going on for quite a few years now. Every year, I always share the best, the ones that I like the most, and I have, although last couple of years have been a bit busy, but certainly the year before that, I produced quite a lot of maps of my own.
And there are people who try and respond to all 30 of the challenges.
Absolutely. And huge kudos to the ones that do, because it is actually very tough, particularly over the weekends. that sort of thing. But usually there's a particular day where you use a new technology or something that you're not used to, or maybe there's a web cartography challenge on a particular day. So hopefully we'll get to see people who've used our customized interface on this one coming up.
And hopefully one of the days asks for a hand-drawn map.
Absolutely, yes, it has done in the past, and
just to remind us that you can make maps without a computer.
Absolutely, it's always one of my favourite. It always shows the most creative results.
So, you've also been doing some stuff at MapTiler with augmented reality, haven't you?
Yeah, and this was something that really, really got me quite excited, and particularly my kids, who have now got a MetaQuest headset and have not been playing with maps, but entering this world. And I know virtual reality, augmented reality, has been a bit of a gimmick, and it's sort of written off by many people. But I actually think that this has a real potential, a real future for geospatial in using these technologies. And I think in particular augmented reality, which is where you're mixing the virtual and real worlds. So, you know, being able to don your headset and see from your location where you're standing in the real world what the impact of a wind farm might be, to say, or a new development. I had a great experience of sort of being King Kong walking through Manhattan the other day in a large room, seeing the map in 3D laid out below me, was actually quite eye-opening. And then again, with the Apple Vision Pro, wandering around, showing my colleagues at work my morning dog walk round and up the hills in my little corner of Scotland, and, you know, getting excited and telling them about what they're seeing and where they're seeing. These sorts of things, these sorts of experiences are just so much more powerful than what you can convey with words or images or even just a plain map. So I think there's a real space here as these headsets or tablets, phones, you can use it all these different devices. As they get more and more affordable, easier to share, and you know, the bandwidth requirements, with the bandwidth goes up, the requirements come down. So you can push all of this information into a device and just really, really use it as the best way of communicating what's happening to people. So in the world of focus groups and public inquiries or you know, all of these different things, where this will be such a really, really powerful tool. So, you know, this got quite a few people excited at MapTiler, and so we again focusing on that usability. What's going to make this easy? What's going to make people be able to just access this thing? So we built our augmented reality capabilities into our own MapTiler SDK, which is our way of putting maps on the web. Obviously, you don't need to use it for all of our services, but we've built the MapTiler SDK to make things usable, essentially, that instead of having to put in lines of code, you can just mention one of our product names. So you're using our SDK, it's familiar with all of our services. So within that, just with a few lines of code basically saying add augmented reality, you can actually have a button on your map, and if your users are on a tablet, an iPhone or Android phone, or using a headset, looking at a website with a map in it, they can just click on that button and it will turn that into an augmented reality environment. So you're seeing the map in your environment. You can place it on your desk and everyone will gather around and they can see this thing in 3D in the space around you. And again, a few lines of code, but it's pretty much platform agnostic. So you can, as long as your device can access the web, it can access this augmented reality model. So it doesn't matter if you're on Android or Apple or any of these different things. All of them, the more recent headsets, will all be able to access this. It's just an absolutely fantastic communication tool that we've made super, super easy to just use. So if you're using our SDK, like I said, a couple of lines of code, and there it is on the desk in front of you.
Okay, that sounds cool. I mean, and I can imagine in a planning environment being able to visualize plans and developments and actually wander through or walk around them would help in making these sort of aesthetic and value-based judgments. I always think that the thought of everybody walking around with sort of Google glasses or Apple headsets is just a little bit too much and it's never going to take off. But then I realize that if you get on the tube or you walk around in London, sort of one in four, one in five people are wearing AirPods or an equivalent sort of device plugged into their ears. And those are, you know, have become so ubiquitous, we don't even notice people wearing them anymore. So I can imagine if they can make these augmented reality headsets lightweight enough and sort of less intrusive, they will also become pervasive.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I mean, I think going back to what you said about planning, I think that's where it is for me. And it's not necessarily something that you're using all the time day to day, but great for the planning meetings and things like that. But if you're planning just something like a walk or you know, an outdoor activity, disaster planning is another huge area as well. If you want to know what the internal structure of a building is like, or what an area was like prior to a disaster, being able to see that in 3D, it's not necessarily a sort of like I'm here on the ground and need to know now, but I'm going here, I'm going to do this on this date, this day, what's it going to be like before I get there? I mean, quite often we'll resort to that sort of street view thing. And, you know, when I'm planning a journey for that last half mile, okay, I'm going to arrive here on this road. What does it look like? What am I looking for? What's the signage? Where's the turn off for the airport? What does that actually look like? Because sometimes when you're viewing it on a more abstract street map, it you don't quite get what it's going to be like when you're there. Yeah. So being able to do that for these other situations is great. And seeing that in that virtual or augmented reality environment is going to be fantastic.
Great. I think also we forget that augmented reality includes audio as well as visual.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the ability to easily coordinate audio and your map or the coordinates, you know. I mean, just the simple thing, you know, as a tourist, you know, if you're wandering around a city, if having a moderated feed that's just telling you what you're looking at when you're looking at something interesting, not to be intrusive, but just, you know, if you're in tourist mode, you want to know, what's the story about that odd-looking building? You don't want to go to your phone and have to Google it or whatever. I mean, you just want an augmentation of your own reality. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us nicely back around to the amount of research that was going on at Edinburgh University into these, exactly those walking tours. So many of the MSc projects sort of 5 or 6 years ago were based around that. A lot of great research from William McCannis and Phil Barty at Edinburgh University at the time. Just brilliant. So, yeah, very, very true.
So what's next at Map Tyler?
Yes. Well, what have we got coming up? There's a lot. There's not a lot of detail that I can give right now. It's always best to under-promise and over-deliver, I guess. But what you will definitely see is more and more about this improving the user experience and making it easier for everyone to make these high-quality maps and make it easy for them to share those, embed those wherever they want them. So expect to see more from the customized interface, more from the SDK to simplify that coding process, more from our support side of things, more documentation to allow people to just really, really make the most of what it is that we've got to offer. Some more stuff on the weather as well. We have weather maps that you can add the weather layers to our maps. So expect to see some improvements coming there. And also there is the upcoming addition of 3D globes to Map Libre, and obviously by extension that will then filter down into the MapTiler SDK as well. So enhancing the realism of the maps, these sorts of things are all coming soon.
And our listeners can't see the massive grin that is on your face at the moment, Tom, but I'm just sharing that with you listeners. This guy's got a grin a mile wide at this moment. So I expect there's some pretty exciting things coming that he's not at liberty to talk about, but that look out for them in the next 6 to 12 months.
Absolutely.
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. If people want to get in touch, it's maptiler.com, social media handle.
Absolutely. I'm primarily on LinkedIn, so you should be able to find. Always happy to connect with anyone from the industry. So please do feel free to just put in a connection request on LinkedIn. Still holding on to Twitter, but it seems monthly now they're just adding things that are making it less and less attractive to be there. But MapNavTom on Twitter and on Mastodon and on Blue Sky and on Threads. Yes, primarily still Twitter in these things, but possibly moving to one or more of the others soon.
Okay, we'll put those links in the show notes at the end of the show so that people can get in touch if they want to. Tom, it's been great catching up with you again. Thank you very much for being on the GeoMob podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.